Welcome to episode one of the Fake Crime Mockcast, Fishing for Answers. In the Ozark Mountain foothills in scenic southeast Missouri, Lake Ripley attracts anglers from all over the country. The largest catfish ever caught in America, at a whopping 142 pounds, was pulled from the glass-like water in 1997. Avid fisherman 26-year-old Dedrick Davis was drawn to the area for that very reason. He and his new bride, Remy, bought a luxurious home on a quiet cul-de-sac only a short walk from the water. It wasn't long before Dedrick and Remy befriended their neighbors, Greg and Marcy Jones. Greg was also a fisherman, and the two young couples hit it off. Barbecues, lazy afternoons on the lake, on the Jones pontoon boat. Life was good on Lake Ripley, but that soon changed. It was a crisp October night when Marcy Jones took her dog for a walk, as she often did. As she passed the Davis home, a frantic Remy ran from the house to Marcy on the street.
That night, Remy ran from the house. She was hysterical. Her arms were flailing, and she could barely breathe. There was snot all over her face. It was disgusting. I couldn't understand what she was saying. My dog, who knows her and sees her every day, was scared to death of her. It was such chaos that night.
What happened in the house on the quiet cul-de-sac to cause Remy and Marcy's dog to become so frantic?
Remy said she was in the kitchen washing dishes when she heard a thud upstairs, and then she heard someone running down the stairs. The kitchen was at one end of the house, and the stairs were at the other end. So when she reached the stairway, all she saw was a man running out the back door. She didn't see his face. She said he was wearing all black, and he had a Peanuts beanie hat on. You know, like Snoopy, Woodstock.
Once the mystery man was out of the house, Remy Davis went upstairs and made a gruesome discovery. Her young husband, Dedrick, was covered in blood. Dead on their bedroom floor with a single stab wound to the back, the knife was still protruding from his body. Marcy rushed a sobbing Remy into her home and yelled for her husband Greg to call the police. Before long, the quiet cul-de-sac was buzzing with investigators, shadowed by blue lights and papered in crime scene tape. Lieutenant Columbus, a 22-year veteran in the Lake Ripley, Missouri Homicide Department, soon arrived on the scene.
When we arrived at the Davis home, we found a dead Dedrick Davis. Cause of death was a single stab wound to the back with a Ginzu knife. There was a large amount of blood puddled on the floor. There were no defensive wounds. It was as if he had been ambushed and didn't have time to fight back. Nothing in the bedroom was out of place, so a motive of robbery was quickly dismissed. This was personal. Someone wanted Dedrick dead.
But who? When Dedrick wasn't fishing, he was a shift supervisor at the local Good Dog Food Factory. Co-workers said he kept to himself, managed his shift well, didn't have any enemies, except one. Dedrick's co-workers told investigators he'd written up an employee about 2 weeks prior to his murder.
We had several eyewitnesses who said the employee, 57-year-old Joe Billingsley, became irate when Dedrick wrote him up for stealing dog food. It was Joe's third offense, so he was suspended for a week without pay. He was overheard saying, "I'll feed you to my dogs," before he stormed out of Dedrick's office. Joe's a big, burly, intimidating guy. We were told Dedrick was shaken by the episode.
Investigators visited Joe Billingsley at his home 2 days after the murder. He was adamant he was innocent, said he had just lost his cool, but he thought Dedrick was an okay guy. Claimed he threatened to feed people to his dogs all the time, as a joke. Joe's alibi wasn't solid by any means. He told Lieutenant Columbus he was home all night with his pack of Great Danes. He watched a football game, cooked a frozen pizza. Of course, no one could verify this but his dogs, and they weren't talking. Lieutenant Columbus didn't have any solid evidence to place Joe at the scene, but he certainly didn't rule him out. Dedrick's distraught young widow, Remy, also verified the story about Joe Billingsley. She said her husband was fearful after the altercation at the dog food factory.
Remy told me that night Dedrick was killed, but she believed Joe had something to do with it. She told me that she said she had seen him drive by her house a few nights before the murder. I mean, we don't get a lot of traffic in our cul-de-sac, so it's odd for someone to be up and down our street that doesn't live there. I kind of know Joe. Everyone in town knows Joe. He's known for his temper.
But what about that Peanuts beanie? Was Joe a fan of Snoopy? Had he ever been seen wearing such a thing? Lieutenant Columbus said no. No one at the factory had ever seen Joe wearing a beanie, not even on the coldest winter nights in the Ozark foothills. Investigators knew if they could find the man with the Snoopy beanie, then they would find the killer. Lake Ripley is a small town with only two clothing shops in the historic downtown area. And one of the shops did indeed sell beanies with various cartoon characters on them. Scooby-Doo, Mickey Mouse, and yes, even Snoopy and Woodstock. However, there was no record of who bought the beanie. A dead end. A clerk at the store didn't remember anyone purchasing one as of late. Said no one ever purchased the cartoon beanies because they were so ugly. Lieutenant Columbus believed it was possible someone had shoplifted it. The night of the murder, though, and the following day, Lake Ripley police canvassed the cul-de-sac and the surrounding woods for any evidence left behind by the killer. But nothing was found. The leaves in the Davis's backyard didn't even seem disturbed. There wasn't a single cigarette butt or water bottle, and certainly no Snoopy beanie.
We really felt we were at a dead end. No DNA, no fingerprints, not a single hair or shred of evidence to indicate anyone had been in the house that evening. No forced entry. We knew it was possible the front door was unlocked and someone crept in wearing gloves without Remy knowing. We were frustrated, but we knew something would come up. We knew it was only a matter of time before we had the evidence that we needed.
And oh, was Lieutenant Columbus right. On October the 13th, 4 days after the murder of Dedrick Davis, Marcy Stevens showed up at the Lake Ripley Police Department with a Ziploc bag. The contents inside? Something she'd found while walking her dog. Right there, in plain view. Draped over a storm drain and soaked from an earlier morning's rain. Covered in dog hair. A beanie. And on the back? Snoopy and his feathered friend Woodstock, sitting on top of a red doghouse. Would the infamous beanie provide forensic evidence? Find out in 30 seconds. And now the conclusion of episode 1 of the Fake Crime Mockcast, Fishing for Answers. A Peanuts beanie on a storm drain. Marcy Jones says it was just lying there in plain view, as if it had been left behind by the killer 4 days earlier, and the storm from the morning had washed it down the sleepy cul-de-sac.
I could not believe what I was looking at. I was just out there minding my own business with my boxer Sparky like I always do, and there it was. I ran back inside, I got some kitchen tongs and a Ziploc bag, and I tossed it in there. I made sure I did not touch anything. I noticed it was covered in dog hair, and I immediately thought of Joe and his pack of Great Danes. You know those dogs shed a lot.
Lieutenant Columbus thought of Joe as well.
It was a Peanuts beanie hat, all right? It was muddy and soaking wet, but the dog hair on it was evident. Our forensics team examined the hat and pulled quite a bit of short, fine, brindle-colored hair from it and sent it off to St. Louis to be analyzed. It took a couple of days for the DNA to come back. We were hoping for a Great Dane match. And, that's exactly what we got.
The Great Dane was first bred as a boar hunting dog in the 1800s in Europe. And Joe Billingsley owned 7 of them. Of course, there must have been other residents in Lake Ripley who owned that breed, so Lieutenant Columbus reached out to both veterinarians in town. Only a handful of people in the area owned Great Danes, all who had solid alibis and no connection with Dedrick Davis.
You know, I went out to see Joe and told him about the hat with the Great Dane hair on it, how that implicated him, given his story with Dedrick. And he swore up and down he didn't have anything to do with this. And I believed him. I've learned to trust my gut. Being in homicide for 22 years has taught me a thing or two. I know how to read people. My colleagues were ready to throw Joe in the electric chair. And so was most of the town. But it just didn't sit well with me. I knew I needed more. Dog hair, DNA, wasn't enough to convict a man of murder.
And so more is what Columbus looked for. He made regular appearances to the crime scene. He soon became a staple on the quiet lakeside cove, walking up and down the street in his trench coat as the ashes on his cigar smoldered. He was a man looking for the one clue he needed, the one loose string to tie this all together.
I just decided to start over. Forget about Joe Billingsley. Forget about him stealing dog food and threatening Dedrick. Forget about the dog hair on the Snoopy hat. I went back to basics. And basics says we look at the spouse. We needed to take a good, hard look at Remy. So that's what I did.
Remy Davis was born and raised in St. Charles, Missouri, the only child of wealthy parents and grandparents. A long line of wealth, actually. Old money, horse money. Her father was the owner of a Kentucky Derby winner in the early 80s, St. Charles Moe. And that old horse money trickled right into the pockets of Remy and Dedrick Davis. Remy's family money was used to purchase the Lake Ripley home. Dedrick didn't make much at the dog food factory, after all. And before he and his new bride even moved to the beautiful lakeside town, Dedrick wasn't very prosperous in St. Louis, where he was raised, either. There, he'd worked at another factory that made cat food.
Dedrick didn't have nothing. He didn't come from nothing. He was a country boy that loved to fish and happened to meet socialite Remy at a Dierks Bentley concert. Everyone we talked to, though, said he didn't marry her for her money. Everyone in the community said he really loved her and she loved him.
Neighbor Karen Primrose testified to that as well.
Well, you know, I am very, very in tune with people. I can read them. It is my gift. Now, there was no doubt whatsoever that those two were in love. They were always doing that public display of affection out in the driveway. And you know, I even saw on Facebook how Dedrick bought her flowers and chocolates on random Tuesdays. She was always getting him some new fishing gear and, oh Lord, she kept him in those nice Columbia fishing shirts. I mean, they really were in love. Yep, the way my husband Bob and I used to be.
Columbus said Remy's grief seemed genuine. She appeared to be a heartbroken young widow left only with a closet of Columbia shirts and a garage stocked with fishing poles. Karen agreed.
Now, Remy was just a mess. I took her a casserole and a dessert every night after Dedrick died. She was so distraught, she looked plumb awful. Her face was puffy and red. And do you know she wore the same pajamas several days in a row? The smell in that house was quite unimaginable. She hadn't even showered. She said she couldn't stand to go upstairs because the carpet had all been ripped out where Dedrick was killed, and it was just too hard for her. She said she was already making plans to sell the house because, well, it was just too sad for her to stay there. I mean, the girl was a wreck. She didn't even post on that Facebook on the day of the funeral or anything.
Maybe so. But Columbus trusted his gut once again, said he couldn't shake the fact that no evidence was left at the crime scene. Remember, the leaves in the backyard weren't even disturbed? No prints in the house except those belonging to Remy and her dead husband.
I don't know. Something didn't sit right. Remy did seem upset. Those weren't fake tears she cried all over my desk. But I've learned in 22 years of experience as homicide detective that grief isn't the only thing that makes people cry. Regrets do too.
Regret is a powerful emotion indeed. The nagging, longing shame can certainly produce tears. But what did Remy have to say about Lieutenant Columbus's observation?
Those were tears of grief.
That concludes episode 1 of the Fake Crime Mockcast, Fishing for Answers.